Hey, welcome everyone to another ACRO resident podcast. Today we're joined by Dr. Wentworth, who is a faculty at Wake Forest University School of Medicine and has a strong interest in survivorship care. And my name is Nima Razavian. I'm the PGY4 here at Wake Forest and current chair of the ACRO resident committee. So I'm really excited to have Dr. Wentworth here to discuss survivorship with us. I feel like this is a really important topic for residents, but one that we don't necessarily always approach on a day-to-day, manner in clinic because we're so busy with, new consults and things like that. So thanks for joining us, Dr. Wentworth. I think I'd like to start with maybe taking a step back and providing everyone with a bigger picture of, what is survivorship? When we say survivorship, kind of what do we mean by that?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, Nima. It's a real honor. I actually did not really get introduced to survivorship until I entered private practice. And I was absent from a meeting where a group of us were going after NAPBC certification. And because I wasn't at the meeting, they said, Dr. Wentworth will do survivorship. So that is where my interest, so my lesson there to residents is always go to the meetings with your partners and with your colleagues. Otherwise you might get signed up for something. But survivorship, I think just overall, we have a really unique place in cancer care with radiation oncology. We are usually towards the end of a patient's journey. We sometimes are the definitive part of that journey, but other times, for example, in breast cancer, we really are towards the end of that journey, and patients really are starting to look at illness and wellness and sort of moving away from a cancer framework and towards, oh my gosh, this is ending. How am I going to move forward? So we typically say that cancer survivorship starts at diagnosis. And you are a cancer survivor for the rest of your life. If you've heard those words, you have cancer. If a patient has heard those words, you've had cancer, that is a cancer survivor. I tend to think of survivorship in two phases, which is really the acute phase, or the first 6 months to year after the end of their major therapy, and then a sort of chronic survivorship phase. In my experience, that acute phase is where the majority of patients are recovering from their effects of treatment, where they're asking questions like, how is my cancer going to be monitored, where their follow-ups are kind of more condensed and with more providers. And then the chronic survivorship phase is where they're sort of cancer is being monitored, but it sort of fades into the background and is less a part of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting when I was trying to read up for this webinar or podcast on survivorship that, the topics of survivorship or what can be involved in survivorship is very broad,
yes.
Right? Like you can be talking about things like prevention of recurrence, surveillance, screening, late toxicities, psychosocial aspects. And, it's not just the radiation oncologist or just the medical oncologist that's involved, right? It seems like there's a lot of people that can be part of this survivorship team.
That is true. And a lot of it is, I don't know if you have children or not, but a lot of it is sort of moving the patient from being sort of attached to us as the care team of cancer care, and then moving them back towards their normal life. So getting them set up back up with their primary care physician, getting them set back up with their friends, and getting them set up with external resources. I once heard a patient, and I think this is a really apt description. If you kind of think about reversing where you are in the exam room and looking at the exam room from the patient's perspective, this patient was just driving down their normal life road and all of a sudden took this exit off into this weird world. And we all work in it and it's very normal for us, but for them, it's as if they're in a completely foreign country. And they finally get comfortable with us and with, the friendly natives in this country. They learn the language, they get into a rhythm, they know what they're supposed to do, they know where the bathrooms are, all that sort of thing. And then survivorship, they're beginning to get this sense that we're ejecting them from this new world and they've got to rejoin this normal life where most of the people in their life have really gone on with a normal life. And they've had this really bizarre experience that no one else really has had. And so finding a way to help patients transition, patients over and over say that we do a really good job orienting patients into treatment, but it is a very harsh orientation back into their normal life. That transition can be really awkward for patients if we don't stop and think about. And again, I think that radiation oncology, because we're seeing them at their weekly visits, we're checking for toxicity, we're doing skin checks, we're addressing symptoms, as they slowly, I have started incorporating survivorship into my under treatment visits, just to start to prepare them that, hey, this part is ending. You know, a lot of patients have a lot of fatigue after treatment, or their family members have different expectations, you know, trying to sort of say, hey, the train is coming to a stop and you're getting ready to get off at this next stop. How can you move forward to the rest of your life? And so I think that's a really important aspect of just preparing the patient, which they might not even be ready for. They just get left to the side while we all move on and pick up the next patient who's starting their definitive treatment.
Yeah, and I think you kind of touched on a point that I was really interested in, which was, you know, when do you or when do you think we should kind of start that process of talking about survivorship?
I think with everything and every relationship, it is always important to set expectations. And so I start talking about survivorship when I initially meet the patient. So I say, you know, this is my role in your care. This is how I'm going to be following you. And our goal is to get you back to your normal life. And so I start that when I initially start the patient. So they know that the goal is not to make them a cancer patient forever, but is to get them back to normal life as soon as possible. And we are seeing, I mean, you could say, well, what about our palliative patients or what about our whole brain patients? Well, there are so many immunotherapies and systemic therapies that are really improving and extending life in a meaningful way that even patients who have stage 4 disease are living longer with cancer. And it is part of our responsibility, I believe, to sort of talk about what does that life look like? How does it, what does cancer as a chronic disease look like? Because that is also an aspect of survivorship. So I really start survivorship at the consult. I start providing them with local survivorship support groups. I do want to emphasize that I don't think that survivorship is the realm of radiation oncologists. I think the realm of survivorship is processing a lot of grief and trauma and finding meaning. We are responsible for care and, like you're saying, preventative maintenance and monitoring for recurrence. But as far as healing of the patient, again, I think that it's important to open the patient's mind to there are other people that are going to be better equipped to help you on this next journey and to sort of transfer the trust that the patient has in us to people that we vet and we trust to sort of help them on this next part of the journey.
Right. And like you said, right, it's not just, right, the MD necessarily that's providing that survivorship care. And I think that's something that, you know, we as trainees probably get a little bit lost in because we're trying to learn, like, okay, what are the management pathways, you know, check off who, you know, what referrals need to be placed and who needs to be seen. And kind of like the top of your list is like, okay, MedOnc. And if they're set up with that, then you're like, okay, well, you're good. But like you're saying, right, it's more than just, you know, surveillance, which we do a good job of, or screening and that stuff, right? It's also those psychosocial components that, you know, are not necessarily best addressed, you know, by the radiation oncologist or by the medical oncologist. And so then that, you know, leads us to, you know, needing to bring in our other kind of maybe non-oncology specialists, right? Like your psychologist or, you know, something to that nature.
Yes, I will tell you that if we don't open the door to say that we don't have all the answers or that we're open to questions that patients have, our patients go away and they're going to find the answers to those questions. And it might be Dr. Google and not Dr. Wentworth that answers those. Yeah. Or they can get into some really wacky stuff, taking advantage, I believe, of some fear of a cancer patient. And so if we open ourselves up and say, hey, I am interested in you as a whole person, I am not just medicalizing you, then I think that that then opens up that patient to say, hey, I do want to talk about, you know, some depression I've been having, or this neuropathy is really affecting my ability to type when I go to work, or I have noticed some lymphedema. And all of those things, I think, again, it shifts in survivorship from the patient really driving care, or from us driving care in survivorship, the patient's really driving care, because the patient could be sitting there with 15 questions, but if they don't ask us, we write in our note, you know, patient doing fine, no complaints, CT scan looks great, follow up in 6 months. And meanwhile, that patient gets to their car and thinks, oh my gosh, I really wanted to quit smoking, but since she didn't say anything, it must not be important. And so I really think that giving patients an opportunity to understand that we aren't afraid of those questions, and that we can, if we aren't able to provide them answers, which oftentimes we're not, we don't have the time in clinic, we don't have the resources, we don't have the skill set, but we can get them to people who will help them.
Mm-hmm. So how do you solicit those questions from patients? What's your strategy?
Yes. So I always end every single under treatment visit or OTV, whatever you want to call it, I always end with, do you have any questions and what are you worried about? And that I end every follow-up with that. And that has really been helpful. And I pause. I don't have my hand on the door, and I pause and I sit on the exam room table, or I sit on my stool for a second, and let them kind of catch themselves and develop that pause where they know that I am sitting, I am engaged, and I'm interested. I'm not just asking it as a throwaway, because the patient really has to trust that they're going to share something that's very vulnerable. And I think that patients that are in really, I mean, if there's a patient in excruciating pain, if they have moist esquimation all over their neck, we can see that they need something. But these, sometimes I think patients are also reluctant to be the bad patient or the complaining patient. They want to be good for us, or they're afraid of what they tell us might be a sign of cancer. So I think you really have to give them that permission that I'm here with you and I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. And then how does your conversation around survivorship kind of change through the process, right? I know you said this is a, you know, a topic that we should approach continuously, but how does it kind of change from maybe initial consult to OTV to follow up?
Sure. Well, I do also engage my nurse. I think that is people will tell nurses almost anything. And sometimes the white coat puts up kind of a barrier to what patients will talk about. So a lot of times it's a therapist and the nurses that are like, oh, did you know so-and-so doesn't have any food? Or did you know so-and-so's daughter is in the hospital or something like that? So really getting that team to be on this survivorship messaging train. So through OTV, especially, for example, in a breast cancer patient, I would say maybe the third or fourth to last under treatment visit, I'd say, hey, you know, have you thought about the end of treatment? Like, how are you feeling about that? Mm-hmm. And patients, sometimes they'll be like, oh, I'm so excited to be done. And then the next week they'll come and say, gosh, I thought about that. I'm kind of nervous. I feel like I don't want to be away. How are you going to monitor for my cancer recurrence? Who am I going to see? I've gained all this weight. I want to go back to work. So I sit down and I talk about, you know, fear of recurrence is very common. I refer them to, we have a partner here, a community partner that's a nonprofit that does an orientation to survivorship. So that opens that conversation for a referral out to them. And I say, you know, this is really important. I start setting expectations for patients that, hey, your family's going to be ready to celebrate. They're going to say, oh my gosh, treatment's done. We do the bell ringing and balloons and all of that. But just so you know, you might crash a month after treatment and just say, I can't get off the couch. So be thinking about how you can put some boundaries around yourself to start thinking about, I'm still healing. Even though my body, it looks like I'm getting better, the microscopic internal healing and the emotional healing may just really be beginning. So I start to have those conversations about, hey, have you thought about what's going to go on after treatment? And then I start to sort of introduce some of those concepts, and I also put my recommendation behind that. If we just say, oh, here's a flyer, read it, the chance of somebody doing that is, you know, about 0%. But if we say, I think this is really important, these people can really help you, and your spouse can go, or if your kid wants to go, they can go with you. I think if we really empower the patient and say, we think it's important, that means a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I really like that point that you made about kind of, you know, soliciting what the patient's worried about. And then I think another really powerful thing that we can do is, you know, in many ways, kind of like normalize those emotions for them.
Yes.
Right? Because we see this every day, right? But this patient is experiencing it for the first time. And I've definitely, I'm sure you've seen this too, where like that patient feels like they're the only one that's ever experienced that. And right, to them, right, it's an N of one. That's the only time they've ever seen that. And so they think, you know, whatever they're feeling or experiencing is, you know, something that no one else has gone through, and they're worried that we're not gonna, you know what to do or understand that. And I feel like it's just so powerful. And you can, you know, see it in the patients, right? When you kind of normalize that feeling to them and be like, you know, we actually see this, you know, pretty often. You're not alone in this, and here's what we can do.
Yes, you're exactly right. And sometimes if the patient says, oh, I'm not worried about anything, I'm fine, I say, well, just like you were saying, Nima, you're so right on. Well, you know, sometimes patients tell me that blah, 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 and I give an example, or sometimes patients are worried about this, and I'm going to give you some handouts just in case you might be worried about that. And so I think that sometimes for those patients that may be reluctant, normalizing it, just like you were saying, is really important.
Yeah. And I think another thing, this is something maybe I was more curious about, is, right, over time in radiation, we've kind of seen our fractionation and treatment schedules go from like very long, right?
Yeah.
Spending 6-7 weeks with patients. And then now suddenly some people, right, 5 fractions, mm-hmm. 1 fraction, you only get that one visit. I'm kind of curious, you know, do you kind of change what you do now if you're like dealing with more kind of condensed treatment regimens?
Sometimes for those patients, I will wait until the after treatment visit, the 1 month visit. Mm-hmm. I really encourage all of my patients to come back for that 1 month treatment visit, because it's sometimes for different patients, now they're over the acute effects of treatment, or they're right in the middle of, oh my gosh, what's happening to me? So other than really palliative patients that really have a very short life expectancy, sometimes I use that 30-minute visit, because a lot of patients, I mean, we don't really need that time. Do you have pain? No, it's better. I'm down on pain meds. I'm seeing medical oncology. I'm on chemo. Great. Okay, well, that was 10 minutes. What do we do for the rest? And sometimes you do need that rest of the time to finish your dictation. So, and this is not every patient, but I do spend some time, again, talking to patients sometimes at that 1 month visit, saying, hey, this is really important, or have you considered this? My conversion to the importance of survivorship, I'll tell a quick story, was when I was training a new nurse practitioner who was, I had hired to do survivorship, and she'd done a fellowship at MD Anderson. She was Miss North Carolina. She was wonderful. She was so great. And she was seeing one of my follow-up breast patients that I had treated 3 years ago. She was doing fine, just seeing her for follow-up. And the nurse practitioner spent about 45 minutes in the room, and I'm out there going, come on, we got more patients. Like, what's going on? Clinic's backing up, you know? And she comes out, and I'm like, what were you talking about? And she's like, oh, well, she's having a lot of vaginal dryness due to her aromatase inhibitor. And she and her husband have not had sex for 3 years because of this issue. So she wanted to talk about that and see if there was anything she could do. And my heart was like broken, because here, this was a young female patient. I was a young female physician. The typical barriers that you think about to having that conversation, I wouldn't think were there. But it really took a different approach to talk about something that was extremely meaningful, that my normal questions around survivorship, around breast survivorship or surveillance, would not have caught at all. Now, you do have to be careful, because you have to be comfortable with asking the questions and the patient's answering. The worst thing is to ask a question and then be like, I don't know what to do. So that, again, sometimes is where the nurses, they're used to all this stuff. So sometimes, again, and that was a nurse, because I think that nurses and nurse practitioners are so great at asking questions and listening to patients, whereas we can tend to be a little bit prescriptive. So I think that that really showed me that there were things that patients were struggling with in a room that I had not elicited in my follow-up visits, which I felt were very, you know, open. So that, I think, is a really important part of continuing survivorship in our follow-up visits.
So just changing gears a little bit, I thought we'd kind of now shift to talk about, you know, what resources are available. So how about we start with maybe what are some like on-site resources that we can look to and turn towards?
So my recommendation with any practice when you first join and you're looking around is obviously look at your contract and look at your radiation oncology partners, but we're all now trained in these large institutions that have a lot of support. And as you go out into the community, that support can be really different. So there are hospitals out there that don't have a navigator, don't have a social worker, don't have a dietitian, all of these things that you're really used to having. So when you are interviewing, you need to ask, what is the cancer patient support team, or what are the resources that are available in the community? Because you do not understand what it's like to walk into, or maybe some of you do, it is very difficult to walk in and have a growing practice of 20 patients, have 5 tumor boards you need to go to, and not have a dietitian, and all of a sudden you're managing tube feeds. So when you're interviewing, when you're on the interview trail, ask about your cancer support team. And when you show up that first week, start to get to know those people and vet them. There is usually someone in a cancer center who is a survivorship, I guess, a survivorship champion. That could be a community person. It could be a volunteer. It could be a chaplain, a social worker, a navigator, a nurse, a physician. Mostly in the community, it's probably going to be a nurse or a social worker or a community partner. But finding that person and then, you know, saying, what is your approach to survivorship here? How do you guys handle that? And finding that on-site person is really important. I've been in the area, the Piedmont Triad here, and it's really taken me 10 years to sort of vet through people that I trust, different organizations that are going to be in the community for 10 years. And a lot of that is due to connections that I made through the cancer patient support community at BAPA, at Wake Forest, and at the other institutions that I've worked at.
Yeah, so it sounds like it would be really helpful to kind of, if you're able to already have those resources that are in place, or you might have to kind of make like a almost a resources sheet for yourself of like, who are your go-to people for kind of like X, Y, and Z issues that a patient may be experiencing.
Or, now that you're an attending, you don't have to make it anymore. You can say, hey, I really need some survivorship resources. Would you mind putting that together? And you can tell your nurse to do that, you can tell your social worker to do that. And there are people that are going to be, you are the best radiation oncologist. And then there's going to be people that are going to be able to put those resources together for you. And they're really excited and impressed that you asked.
Mm-hmm. And then what about, so we talked about kind of like maybe resources at your treatment center. What about online? What are some resources you suggest that we look at if we're interested in learning more?
Sure. So we can maybe put these in the show notes. There are a couple online resources that I think are really great. You may take a job in a rural area, particularly where there aren't a lot of resources. And the great thing about the internet, well, plus and minus about the internet and plus and minus about virtual, but there have been really a plethora of different support resources that have really become stronger through COVID. So one of the great ones that I use is cancersupportcommunity.org. And they are an organization that will partner with patients. They have online virtual support groups that are really wonderful. I also send patients to canceradvocacy.org. And that is the National Cancer Survivorship Coalition, National Coalition of Cancer Survivors. And it is a group that lobbies for cancer survivors in DC. It's a very wonderful group. And they have a great survivorship toolkit. And I either provide a QR code for my patients, or I just print out a title page of these, and I hand it to patients as they're leaving or with their 1-month follow-up note, or as my nurse is sort of doing their orientation out of radiation visit at their end of treatment, she'll go over that with them and say, hey, these are two organizations that are helpful for you. And finally, I'm a really big fan of Julie Landford. She runs Cancer Dietitian, that's with two T's, .com. And it is a great resource for patients that have all those crazy questions like, does sugar feed cancer? And what about soy and tofu and breast cancer? Julie has a bunch of webinars. She runs a bunch of challenges. She does online cooking classes. And she's a certified oncology dietitian. And she does a really great job of answering all those questions that you may not have time to. And so a lot of times I have either given out her handouts or I send patients directly to her website for sort of those day-to-day conversations, because she does a really great job of explaining them in easy to understand language.
Great. Well, I thought we could just wrap up, Dr. Wentworth, and I'd like to know from you maybe what's like one or two takeaway points that, you know, us as residents should remember about survivorship.
Oh, gosh, I could talk for hours, Nima, on survivorship. I think as radiation oncologists, always remember that we are the only people that have done 4 years straight of cancer. That's all we do is cancer. And so we have a unique view of cancer as the only disease that these patients are dealing with. To me, with that view comes responsibility for preparing our patients, not only for what SIM is going to be like and what, you know, treatment's going to be like, but also what after treatment is going to be like. And the second thing is that you can't be everything to everyone. You are not an avocado. You can't make everyone happy, and you can't be everything to everyone, even though residency tries to teach you that you can be everything to everyone. As you move out into practice, bring in people that can help you with these survivorship questions and these survivorship programs, because you will quickly get overwhelmed. And oftentimes there are programs that are already started that you can just refer, you can vet, make sure you trust them, go to a meeting, go to a support group, and then transfer your patients into those already established programs.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Wentworth so much for joining us today and giving us this really insightful conversation on survivorship. For all of our listeners out there, you can listen to this podcast and other podcasts on our ACRO YouTube channel. And then on Twitter, you can follow us at ACRO Resident. So thanks again, Dr. Wentworth. And I hope everyone now starts to think more about survivorship.
Thank you, and good work. You guys are doing really great work, and it gets better after residency.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks, Nima. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Wentworth.